Folks, here's a special bonus for you, an interview with Adam Miller discussing Letters to a Young Mormon, a collection of essays he first published in 2013. We think you'll like the interview and the book so much that we've recorded the book itself. It's available on our website, www.byuradio.org/ingoodfaith. Just click the Book Club tab and you find all 14 different episodes, one for each of the letters in Adam's book. This is a special mini-series for our listeners, and we hope you enjoy the effort we made to bring you Letters to a Young Mormon. And now our bonus episode with Adam Miller.
It's kind of an unusual book written from an unusual perspective. I wrote it and did the best that I could and commended it to their care and attention, and have let them find their way to it if or when the time arrives.
I'm speaking with Adam Miller, who's the author of Letters to a Young Mormon, first published in 2013. He's a professor of philosophy at Collin College in McKinney, Texas, and the author of 8 books, serves as the current director of the Mormon Theology Seminar. Adam, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure.
This is a really cool opportunity to revisit a book that still has its own life and is still current, but has been a decade since it came out. And we like this book so much that we're actually putting it on our website, a new version, an audio version that people can listen to. And just to introduce people who are about to listen to it and to hear it, either for the first time or perhaps they're going to hear this new take. What was the first inspiration to write this? Were people coming to you? Were you having discussions? Or was it just something that popped into your brain?
That's a great question. No one was coming to me asking for this book. It's crazy to think that it has been more than a decade already since the first edition was published. When I wrote the book originally, I wrote it at least in part with my own children in mind. And, a week from today, our youngest will go off to college and the house will be empty now. So it's crazy to think. I'm a philosopher by trade. I teach philosophy at a college here in Texas. And though I specialize in philosophy of religion, that work is about as abstract and theoretical and arcane as you would imagine it would be. But still, that work has really changed me in pretty profound ways, to not just dedicate my personal life, but my professional life to thinking about God and to thinking about religion and to thinking about our own tradition and Latter-day Saint scripture. And this book really was my first attempt to try to distill for a more popular audience, especially for my own children, some of the things that I learned along the way, both at the level of ideas and at the level of lived Christian experience. And as I say in the introduction to the book is a kind of attempt to address the real beauty and the real costs of living a Latter-day Saint life in a way that doesn't abandon either the gospel or life. And I hope the book does that in part.
Because you're a philosopher, you've written a lot in academic works, and that's an area of expertise. But you wrote this in a whole different way, using a tradition of letters to, I thought of Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet. C.S. Lewis did his Screwtape Letters. What led you to letters?
This book does belong to a whole subgenre of books that all bear some version of the title Letters to a Young Poet, or Letters to a Young Journalist, or Letters to a Young Calvinist. I had a friend, a colleague, Jamie Smith, who wrote a book called Letters to a Young Calvinist that was for me kind of the spark that prompted me to try my hand at my own version of this text and compose a book called Letters to a Young Mormon. The format is appealing. The format's personal, but that's part of why I chose that format for sure, a much more personal form of address. If you approach writing about these ideas in the form of letters, especially letters to your own children, then you can speak in the second person. You can address the other person informally. There's something very powerful about saying you, speaking directly to another person when you're writing, especially if you're imagining that that person is as one of your own children. The format allows for asides and digressions and personal experiences, and it's, I think, in general, a very private, intimate form of address that allows you to speak very honestly in a kind of confessional mode, both in terms of confessing your faith and in terms of confessing your own weaknesses, which I think are both crucial parts of taking the gospel of Jesus Christ seriously.
And something we don't always hear, for instance, in a sermon or a quote inspirational book is like, here's how I did it wrong and learned from it, can be really beneficial. I picture you having your own children in mind as you wrote it. Did you use them as a test group and read these as you went along?
No, I did. I did not treat them as a real live focus group. And it, you know, in fact, to this day, I'm not sure which of them have ever read it or how much. I wrote it and did the best that I could and commended it to their care and attention, and have let them find their way to it if or when the time arrives. It's in a kind of unusual book written from an unusual perspective by someone who lives far outside Utah. And somehow it has found readers over the years. And I hope it's been helpful. But the fact that there's any interest at all in the book is the reaction that has probably surprised me the most. Though the other reaction that's probably worth noting is the fact that perhaps predictably older Mormons have been generally more interested in the book than younger Mormons. Though when I composed the book, I tried to keep in mind the fact that I wanted to write something that would be useful for my children, not just when they were children, but maybe, you know, that they could come back to as adults and that it would be meaningful for them as adults too. And so maybe that's not super surprising.
What do people thank you for when they do write you a thank you for the book? Are they specific?
I think people tend to thank me in particular for the kind of honest, unvarnished, confessional quality of the book that the format in particular encourages. I try very hard in the book to just speak in my own voice out of my own experience, both as a disciple of Jesus Christ and in particular as a Latter-day Saint, but without attempting to speak on behalf of the church as a whole or Christianity at large. And that allows me a certain, I think, freedom in terms of the degree with which I can be personal and intimate in the expression of my faith. And I think that especially people have appreciated.
In the 10 years plus now since the book was first published, have you seen changes in society or in church that would make you think, well, if there were a third edition, I might change this or that? Or do you feel like what you wrote stands just as a whole? I'd be sort of like a painting you might go back to and say, no, it's actually done.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's probably actually done. Well, I don't know that I could do better than I did. I would hope that other people reading the book might think to themselves, I could do better than this, and then do better than I did. But it's clear to me in general that words and books are pretty weak and fragile things, and it's a little bit of a miracle when they reach across the gap and manage to have some force and power. I don't know that I could do better than I did. If I could change or correct one particular thing, there is one sentence I would like to add to the book. Uh-huh. And it comes in the chapter in the second edition, this dedicated to the Sabbath day, where I describe baking bread. And I include with that description my mother's recipe for bread. Though if you've read the book and have ever made bread, it should be immediately obvious to you that I have left the salt out of my mother's recipe, which would make for actually terrible bread. And so if there's one thing I could fix about the book, it's that for sure.
Yeah, I could see them publishing an errata, just like, please add salt. That would be the whole thing.
Please, yes.
Or take this book with a grain of salt. That might be.
Yes. Very good.
Adam, on an episode 129 of In Good Faith, we discussed how to respond to grief. And you talk about the sacrifices that we do make if we want to be a disciple or a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and follow Jesus Christ. Do you wish you'd had a book like this when you were, quote, a young Mormon? Or did you have something that functioned that way for you?
I'm enough of a narcissist to say that, yes, of course, I would have wanted a copy of my own book when I was a teenager.
Traveler from the future.
That's right. That would appeal to me in multiple ways, I think, already, even at a young age. You know, I don't know that there was some kind of book that filled this kind of a role for me, especially as a teenager. Maybe the closest thing would have been maybe the Book of Mormon itself.
Yeah.
But that's clearly a different kind of thing and working in a different kind of way.
Are you able to sum up something that you hope that someone who reads the book or listens to it will take away? It has so many subjects. I'm wondering, is there some overarching thing you'd love for people to take away?
I would hope that in reading the book, they could catch a glimpse of God. I would like them to catch a glimpse of what it would look like to live a genuinely Christian life, a life that's grounded in God rather than the world, a life that plays by different rules than the world's rules, that's animated by different values than the world takes for granted. At some level, at some point in our lives, is some combination of biology and culture, I think we all take for granted that the world is right about what it means to be happy and about how to be happy, that in order to be happy, what we have to do is we have to find some way to save our lives, right? We have to find some way to fulfill our dreams and satisfy our desires and show really that we're special and important and that we matter. But as best I can tell, that's all wrong. That's all wrong. And the gospel instead asks us to do something that is very surprising and very counterintuitive. Jesus asks us to believe that in order to find joy, we have to lose our lives instead of saving them. And this really is what I think I'd like readers to take away. I'd like them to catch a glimpse of what it looks like to find joy in God as they stop trying to save their lives and instead, step by step, bit by bit, learn how to lose those lives in a kind of consecrated effort.
Thanks again to Adam Miller for the chance to talk about his book, Letters to a Young Mormon. And thank you to Deseret Book, who worked with us to produce this project. Listen to our brand new audio version of the book, which you can find over at our website. Head to byuradio.org/ingoodfaith and look for the Book Club tab. Or listen on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.